Welcome to Monday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live here on Giants.com. He is Paul Dottino. I'm Lance Meadow with you for the next 60 minutes, 201-939-4513. That is the telephone number. You can't get to the phone. You can also follow and interact with us on Twitter using hashtag GiantsChat. With you for the next 60 minutes, we'll recap rookie minicamp. We'll get to your phone calls and we'll get to your tweets as rookie minicamp wrapped up over the course of the weekend. The Giants wound up, Paul, signing four players who took part in rookie minicamp that were not previously signed, were not part of the undrafted rookie free agent class that they had brought in, as well as obviously the draft class. So they did find a few players that jumped out. And, you know, this was obviously the first opportunity for us to see the rookie class, the guys that they actually drafted up close and personal. And while it's great to see what their potential is on the field, there's only so much you could take away in rookie minicamp, Paul. So I look more for how they interact, what their personalities are like, and how they may actually wind up fitting into the atmosphere of the team.
Yeah, I think those are very important things. Also, how do they handle the media when they get the opportunity to answer some questions? You want guys who seem to have more than a deer in headlights look, because that can be kind of spooky. But the other thing is, really, to be honest, I'm also looking at the physical conditioning of the guys, because, you know, whether or not they are drafted players or undrafted rookies, they haven't played football since January, or in some cases since December. And if a guy comes in and he doesn't look sculpted, he doesn't look like he's in condition, he doesn't look like he's in shape, that's a pretty good indication that he hasn't devoted the last 3 or 4 months to working out for his pro career. That, to me, is always a red flag. So I do think it is important that when a guy comes onto campus for the first time, he at least physically looks like he's been working out and his body fat's down and he doesn't have, you know, a little extra love handles.
Flab or something like
you
that,
know. Yeah. No, I mean, it's important. I think it's very important. The guy should make an impressive physical appearance when he steps onto campus. He should be showing you that he's put a ton of hours into sculpting his tools. That would be his physique, because he's now ready to embark on a pro career.
Well, especially since that's what jumps out. Also, they're not putting on pads at this point.
No. You know,
so you're actually able to see what the physique is all about, because they're not covered up with all of the other protection and so forth.
Well, a lot of these guys were already seen in T-shirts and shorts
at the combine
or at their pro days. So now, if they looked like they were impressive then because they were still training and breaking their
butts,
they should
resemble that.
Darn straight.
Yeah.
And if a guy walks on the campus now and the scout says, you know, I remember when I just saw him 2 months ago or 3 months ago when he worked out, he looked pretty ripped. Now he looks kind of soft. That's a bad sign.
And especially since this is such a critical time for the rookies, since they have not been in the midst with the veterans. They've been working out on their own. Some of them also have had to complete classes during this period of time, too. Let's not forget, a number of them graduated. So, you know, they really had to rely on their own. And this relates to, we were talking to Jim Zorn last week, Paul. Some players actually have their own trainers that they work with leading up to rookie minicamp before they arrive on the premise, and also some of their own gurus and coaches. Zorn tied with Davis Webb, and Webb did talk about how helpful Jim Zorn was to him during the last few months when he addressed the media. I actually thought, when I looked at the personalities of all the guys, Wayne Gallman, to me, was interesting in how he interacted with the media, because I chuckled when they asked him, and I don't know if you saw this, they had asked him whether or not, you know, when he walked onto the facility, what jumped out to him? You know, what was his first impressions? So he goes, the food. The food was the first thing that jumped out to him. Nothing else. He got a good piece of meatloaf from the kitchen staff. So he was on cloud nine as a result of that.
Well, it makes me question the Clemson facilities. not that
I think he questioned them too.
Yeah, I mean, you know, no disrespect intended to them, nor to the Giants staff. I mean, they do a great job here in the lunchroom. Yeah, look, this is a big deal. Let's not kid ourselves. No matter what level of NCAA Division I college football you played at, when you walk onto campus for the first time in a professional setting, it is still a big deal. I mean, think about it. Even if you didn't play, if you were a high school scholar and you're going for your interviews and you're trying to find out what school you're going to go to, and all of a sudden, you know, in my case, I went to Fordham. You know, I walked onto that Fordham campus for the first time and I'm like, wow, look at this place. It's pretty big. It's pretty wild, pretty cool.
Good for the 5 mile walks.
Yeah, right? It does stuff for you.
Yeah. Well, we will certainly break down more with respect to rookie minicamp in the next few minutes, as well as get you some of your phone calls. For those of you watching on Twitter, you can head on over to Giants.com to watch the remainder of the program. Lance Beto, Paul DeTito with you here. Big Blue Kickoff Live, Monday's edition on Giants.com, recapping rookie minicamp and more here as we move along.
Do want to mention the transaction that was made today, only because there's a very intriguing player that's a part of it. Wide receiver Kevin Snead, a tryout over the weekend, has been signed to a contract with the Giants. They've released offensive lineman Martin Wallace. Now, Kevin Snead's out of Division II Carson Newman. Now, why do I bring this up? I bring this up because whether or not you think he's a billion to one to make the roster, and Lord knows he's going to have a hard time to do so, I bring it up because he was regarded as the fastest man in college football. Now, we know that Ross ran a 4.22, the wide receiver at the combine, and set the all-time combine record in the 40. Well, at the regional combine, which Kevin Snead participated in, he ran a 4.28. At his pro day, in a hand-timed situation, he ran a 4.22, matching Ross, also ran a 4.26. At the regional combine, had a vertical of 38.5 and then went to 37.5 at his pro day. Very impressive in terms of speed. Again, regarded as the fastest man in college football, and the vertical is incredible. Now, here's what I'm trying to tell you, folks. Look, he's played very little football.
Not a lot.
He's a track guy. He's a sprinter in track.
That's where most of his experience is.
Correct. I believe he's caught 5 passes in his college career. Okay? Very, very, very limited football experience. Now, we're trying to nail down his height and his weight because there seems to be some conflicting published reports as to what exactly his height and his weight is. So I'm not going to quote those numbers. It's pointless to tell you that because we haven't been able to nail down exactly what those numbers are. But here's what I will say. If the guy is that much of an athlete who has that much quickness and speed, which you cannot teach, at the very least, it seems to me he could be a valuable practice squad candidate because you can't teach speed. And nothing can get your players coached up faster in preparation to face a speed demon on Sunday than chasing a jackrabbit like this during practice. He could be a slot receiver. He could be a receiver out wide. He could play special teams in the kick return game. He could also be a tailback in the run game. And he could also be the scrambling quarterback. He doesn't even have to throw the ball. He could just run around like a scrambler as a quarterback with all these running guys that you're facing in the NFL today. You can't teach speed. And I truly believe there is benefit in having a guy like this, at the very least, if he's not going to make you 53, on the practice squad, because he can give your defense a true look at pure speed as you prepare for Sunday's game and whoever it happens to be that you're going to face, whether it's DeSean Jackson on the outside or some speedy guy in the kick return game, as I said, or if it's your defensive linemen who have to chase this jackrabbit in the backfield. It's an intriguing signing. Even if he doesn't make the 53, I could see this guy providing some value for the Giants on the practice squad. I just want to get that out of the way.
Well, on that subject, they signed 3 other players prior to today who actually also took part in rookie minicamp. Just want to run through the names real quickly this way in case you're looking at the roster, you understand who was brought in at what time. Khalid Abdullah, running back out of James Madison, small guy, certainly has plenty of quickness. He was added. They also added Saquon Edwards, defensive back out of New Mexico, who actually spent brief stint with the Oakland Raiders, so he already has a bit of NFL experience. And then Trey Robinson, the defensive back out of Furman. So those were the 3 others, in addition to Kevin Snead, who took part in rookie minicamp, who were signed and given contracts. Because what happens is, now that you're trying to put together the 90-man roster, Paul, mm-hmm. every time you make a move, you also need to then waive a player, make a corresponding move to open up a roster spot. And that's exactly what the Giants are trying to do as they square away their 90-man roster leading up to the start of training camp. So there were a few players that certainly caught the attention of the coaching staff. And as far as the rookies Adam Biznovati saw time on the right side on the first day of rookie minicamp, and then Chad Wheeler, the undrafted rookie free agent, got time on the left side. Once again, there's only so much you can read into these things, but those were at least some of the logistics that were in play as to how they utilized the offensive linemen.
Well, Wheeler is regarded as coming out of USC as a guy who's got more technical skills, and Biznovati is regarded as a guy who's more of a scrapper and a fighter. And so that's why you would put them on the left and right side, respectively. In addition to that, Wheeler, was it 6'7", 307, I think, you know, more of a bigger guy. It just seems that, that's probably the smarter way to go. I just want to mention Abdullah for a second. He ran for like 1,800 yards at James Madison last year, as I recall. You'll remember Delvin Joyce was a James Madison running back the Giants had many, many years ago when I believe Jim Fossil was here, or it might have been Reeves. I can't recall the exact years now. But Delvin was a running back who came out of the FCS level at James Madison. In those days, it was 1AA. And Delvin was a kick returner and a backup halfback. So clearly the pipeline from James Madison to the Giants is still alive.
Well, and in addition to the 1,800 yards, how about 22 touchdowns, too? So has a knack for finding the end zone as well.
There's production. And once again, folks, understand, the roster can be 90 right now. And the NFL, to my knowledge, has not released the dates for the 75 and the 53 cutdowns. Have you seen them?
No, I have not seen any official, but we're talking about two or three preseason games in by the time we get to that anyway.
Right. Yeah. My point is, okay, when you are as talented a roster as the Giants have right now, okay, signing guys like this aren't necessarily wasted effort because they can help you on the practice squad. Like I said a moment ago about Snead, there's value to be gained when you've got some quality on that practice squad that you can work against and guys who can mimic those opponents that you're going to play against. And you know what? The guy turns out to be that good. Unfortunately, either he will get scapped up by somebody because someone else is going to want him on their 53. That could always happen. But then on the plus side, well, guess what? If he's better than the scout guy, maybe it turns out you might need him. And maybe he makes you 53 at some point. You know, you never know if you're going to get an injury or maybe he just flat out beats out somebody. So it is intriguing when you see a guy who ran for 1,800 yards and 20-something touchdowns. You look at that production and you say, well, you know, the guy can ball. So let's see.
And we're not going to necessarily see that until the preseason and game situations for a lot of these players. So I think that that's something to at least take into consideration. We're going to get to your phone calls here in a second at 201-939-4513. Paul, I just wanted to touch on a few other things. The coaches spoke to the media, offensive coordinator, defensive coordinator, as well as special teams coach. There's been a lot of talk about the kicker position, Paul, and we talked about this throughout the offseason. The Giants did not draft the kicker. They did not go out and sign a veteran. They have Aldrick Rosas, who we have talked about on this program earlier last week as well. And Tom Quinn spoke about him for the first time because we really didn't get the gist of what Quinn has seen during practice. And, you know, they're encouraged by his leg. They're encouraged by his work ethic. But what I felt was quite interesting, what Tom Quinn brought up, is he said the Giants have had a track record of developing young kickers. They haven't stayed with the team. But, you know, let's not forget, Brandon McManus was traded to the Denver Broncos when he lost out to Josh Brown. And then Chris Boswell, who is another name that people don't bring up very often, now is the Steelers kicker. Both of them were under Tom Quinn's watch in terms of working their way up the ladder.
Keep going back.
Well, I'm sure there's plenty
of
other
examples. Matt Bryant, Olindo Mare, Matt Stover. The Giants have had an unbelievable track record of planting kickers throughout the NFL for years. That's what they do.
Now, here's the difference, though, and I'm just going to focus on the first two that I mentioned. As you mentioned, there's plenty of other examples going back. With McManus as well as Boswell, you had an incumbent in Josh Brown and one who is going to go down as one of the most efficient kickers in Giants history.
Yes.
He actually had set a single-season franchise mark. So that was tough to overcome regardless of how impressive those kickers were in the preseason. Rosas, he's got no incumbent that he has to battle.
No.
He could be the guy that sets the tone in the event that they bring somebody else in. But once again, until you see the kicker in a game situation, it's very hard to say this is what you're going to see translate. Case in point, remember, Tom Obarski, was in camp last year. People forget about that. Mm-hmm. And then he had that one game he wound up missing, and then they wound up bringing in the established Randy Bullock, the veteran, to suit up for that week one while Josh Brown was serving his suspension.
I mean, if you look at the veteran free agent kickers who are out on the street right now, Carpenter is probably the only guy who has a...
Dan Carpenter, the former Bills kicker.
Who has enough of a significant resume where you could say, you know, he's got a proven track record of some sort that, you know, you might want to take a look at. But other than that, at this particular moment, it's really slim pickings if you're looking for an experienced kicker who has a resume. And I don't know that I can ever remember an offseason where it's been that thin, because usually veteran kickers are a dime a dozen. You can go to the supermarket and have your pick on the shelf of four or five guys who have an established resume, who've kicked in this league for four, five, six, 10 years. They're always out there. You know, right now, I think Carpenter is the only one. So if you're the Giants and you like what Rosas has shown you in his tryout, and that's why you signed him and that's why you have him here, maybe you just say, look, kid, we're going to give you a shot until you screw it up. If you screw it up, maybe you won't, you know. I've heard so many great things about him, and I've done research on him. I'm very confident in his ability, but until he gets under a live bullet situation, you just don't know. Look, if you're the Giants, I think you probably – I know Jerry Reese did say they plan on signing a veteran kicker before training camp opens. Would Carpenter be that guy? I don't know. Then again, would Carpenter want to come here if he knows that this kid has got that much of a leg? Maybe he doesn't want to come here and compete with him.
Well, it depends. I mean, listen, if he's not receiving opportunities elsewhere, he may look at it as, hey, I'll come in right before training camp. I'll push the young rookie. Let the best man win, that type of thing. I mean, the other thing that I was going to throw out, you know, you just mentioned they may bring in somebody before training camp. There's also a few teams that have two kickers where they do have a competition between either a pair of veterans or a young guy and an established guy. For example, Tampa Bay is the team that came to mind. They brought in Nick Folk, the former Jet, and they also have Robert Aguayo, who is the young, up-and-coming.
Last year's draft
correct,
pick.
Who struggled a bit. Roberto Aguayo, excuse
yes.
me. So, you know, he's had his ups and downs, and somebody is going to lose, and somebody's going to be out on the free agent
that's
market.
True.
Now, that may not happen until the very end, right before week one.
Well, by that point, during the whole camp and preseason, you'd like to believe Rosas will have established himself so that they don't need to challenge him for the job.
That would be the ideal, or at least you have enough substance to evaluate him over the course of four or five preseason games where you say, okay, we like what we saw, we're moving forward with him, we're a little bit concerned, we want to bring in an established veteran. You'll know a little bit more by then.
One thing that everybody has told me who has seen Rosas kick over the course of the last year or so. Remember, he was on the Titans practice squad last year after coming out of Southern Oregon, had missed a year because of ACL surgery. They all tell me that the thing that impresses them the most about him is that when the ball comes off of his foot, you hear the impact. I mean, he really strokes it. And you don't hear that with a lot of kickers. You know, I'm talking about boom. You almost hear an explosion when the ball's coming off of his foot. So whether he can kick it straight and whether he could do it under fire, look, none of us have seen him do it again.
Of course not, yeah.
So who knows?
And that's why the preseason is going to be
but
so important.
I think he's certainly someone you're going to want to keep your eye on. And I know they're very high on him.
201-939-4513, hashtag Giants Chat. Let's open up the phone lines. Want to hear your thoughts on rookie minicamp as well as how the roster is starting to take shape. Travis is in Queens. Travis, what's happening?
Hey, what's up, fellas? How you guys been?
Doing well,
hi.
Travis. What do you have for us?
I just wanted to talk about the offensive line a little bit.
Sure.
I think this year, you know, versus last year, the offensive line is going to be better. I hear a lot of fans, you know, calling. You know, they're not really too up on the offensive line this year. They, you know, felt like we could have did more, sign, you know, some more offensive linemen. But I think this year is going to be way better for the fact that the pieces around the offensive line that they added, you know, is way better than what we had last year. Everything that we have this year is an addition. You got Brandon Marshall. You got the rookie tight end. and you got Shepard, Odell. So I think that would help the offensive line. Last year, you know, Victor Cruz, you know, he wasn't getting open quick enough and like being a number two wide receiver, which was, you know, delaying the offensive flow, especially, you know, when Odell's getting doubled and the running game it wasn't so good. You know, bright spot is Perkins. So I think, you know, coming into this year, I think the offensive line is going to be, like, way improved than last year.
Well, I think that you certainly have more competition on the roster this year in terms of a mix of young guys and veterans, which, you know, you didn't necessarily, I think, maybe have as many options at this time last year with respect to the offensive line. On top of that, and I think you alluded to this, Travis, Bobby Hart and Eric Flowers both have more starting experience at this time this year as opposed to what they were looking at last year. So the experience factor, the volume factor, I certainly think gives them many more options to experiment with compared to where they were last year. I think that's a fair statement.
So let me ask you guys this. So if you was grading the offensive line based on last year, what would you guys give it?
Well, I mean, listen, the results show for themselves up and down. I mean, you know, I'm not a fond of putting a grade because, you know, once again, I think guys were thrown into positions that, you know, they weren't necessarily anticipating playing. There was a lot of movable chairs. Justin Pugh went down for a few weeks. They had how many different left guards? I mean, they must have moved at least three different guys into left guard. So, I mean, I guess when you take that into consideration, you're expecting there to be some ups and downs as a result of that.
I think fair would be a good grade for them. Fair.
So fair. Okay.
And the reason I say fair, consider what he just said, and then also throw into the fact that they won 11 games, and they were a pass-happy team, and everybody knew they were a pass-happy team, and yet they were still a double-digit win club that made the playoffs. And Eli, you know, he took his hits, but he also was not the most sacked quarterback in the league. So you got to give them some credit for that pass protection.
Right, that's what I'm saying. Right.
And you also have to understand the scheme had something to do with that too. So I would say the offensive line last year was fair.
So would you guys be shocked if it was to, like stay fair this year?
Yes. I think from fair, it's going to go at least to good.
Okay.
If not, even better than that. But I would say from fair to good, I would expect to see a jump.
Right. And that's it. I just wanted to let, you know, fans know, like, you know, like, I think what Jerry Reese envisions this year, like what he put in what the blueprint is good. You know what I mean? Like, even though it's on paper and we don't know what it's going to be, but, you know, I believe that, you know, from the idea of the way he did it, you know, with adding Ellison and, you know, Fluker and stuff like that. You know, he's adding around the five because, you know, like the defensive line, and I never really realized that, like, the offensive line needs chemistry.
Course,
so, you know, you don't
want
to go in and just break things up and move guys here and there.
That's right.
You know, you want to try to keep it together. Like you said, it wasn't that bad where we only won six games. You know, like you said, won 11 games. And I think the Giants is trending.
Part of that also, the improvement in terms of wins. I mean, let's not overlook the defense, I think, had a lot to do with helping solidify those 11 victories. So it was the defense drastically turning things around, where you went from, you know, bottom of the rankings in a lot of different statistical categories to top 10. Then that takes some pressure off of the offense because your defense is not giving up nearly as many points. And I think that was showed on paper as well as on the field last season.
Right. So 11 games last year, how many guys do you think this year?
Well, I think, you know, a lot depends on health. Let's put it this way. The defense is still basically intact from last season. As we just talked about, the offense has added some new personnel that you would assume is going to translate from paper to the field. I don't think it's a stretch to say that the Giants can't duplicate the win total that they had at worst last season. But once again, as I always say this at this time of the year, we don't know and we can't predict the future. We don't know what the injury bug is going to bring. We don't know how things are going to gel. I mean, everything looks great on paper. Sometimes that's different in how it translates to the field. But I think if we go by the paper test, Travis, I mean, I don't think it's a stretch to say that they can't duplicate what they did last season.
All right. All right, then probably for the future, we got to ask Charlie about it. Maybe he could see that far.
Well, I mean, I don't know how accurate his crystal ball is working, but if you want us to ask him the question, we'll be more than happy to ask him the question. He wouldn't be the first one, Travis, that I would look to all of a sudden solidify what your opinion is, but we'll try to appease to you on that end. And appreciate the phone call, Travis. Thanks so much for weighing in on that end.
You know, I wish everybody that wants to totally crucify this offensive line, and you guys know how much I value the trenches. Why don't you think back? I just wanted to look up these numbers here, and I just had to do it right now because it just struck me as the call was coming in. The 1975 Giants, that's the team that played at Chase Stadium the one year, they gave up 49 sacks on 379 passing attempts. So actually it would be about 420
'cause you gotta add the
dropbacks.
Yeah.
That's downright criminal. You know, yeah. And that's when Craig Morton and Carl Summerall were playing quarterback for this team. I watched those games and winced at every single one of those sacks. It was dreadful and more painful than you could even imagine. That's a horrible offensive line. That is a significant lack of blocking and pass protection. And that is how you don't get anything done moving the football, okay? Everybody who wants to set this offensive line on fire should kind of remember back to those days when that offensive line truly was a Kleenex tissue.
Well, and I think the other thing to take into consideration, and it was what the last phone caller brought up, chemistry and how important that is for the offensive line. And a few minutes ago, Paul, I brought up when Pugh went down, you know, there were a variety of different combinations that were playing out as a result of Pugh's injury. Now, I'm not saying that that's the reason why the offensive line was up and down. I mean, even when everybody was healthy, I think that there were some up and down results. But even with competition, this is why I'm bringing up this point, even with competition, more competition at the forefront this season, it's still crucial, Paul, by the time they get into the heart of the preseason, for them to understand who their five guys are so they can start building that continuity as they get closer, an inch closer to week number one.
Agreed. I would say you have to know who your top six guys are.
Okay.
I think that that one sub, whether it's Jerry, Hart, or Fluker, whoever that guy is who loses out in the top five, I think that one you could probably get enough out of those three guys in the two spots. You could get enough snaps out of them throughout the course of the preseason before you actually make that decision. Because you're not talking about a ton of guys. You're talking about three guys for two spots. You could rotate those guys into those spots in weeks three and four of the preseason and still get them enough reps to have some semblance of continuity, I think. And also, let's not kid ourselves. Jerry's a longtime veteran in this league,
and Fluker's been around this league a while too. Yeah.
So it's not like, you know, you're working three new guys in there and saying, oh, we got to get them as many reps to be as comfortable as possible. Two of the three guys, and Bobby Hart's been here a couple years now too, it's not like he's totally green. I think that helps them.
It's maybe more of a player like a Wheeler or a Biznavati.
Correct.
That's who you want to maximize.
Those guys need every rep they can get at whatever position you think they're going to help you at, because they've got to get that familiarity. I don't think Fluker and Jerry are going to need that much coaching up. I think they just need to get their share of the deal, and they'll be okay.
Yeah, they need to get their share. I agree with you there. But then there's got to be a point where they come to a conclusion. We see him as the right guard. We see this guy as the right tackle. Because while there's versatility for those two players, you want to be able to say, going into week one, this is our right tackle, this is our right guard. They feel comfortable playing in those respective positions. Weston Richburg is comfortable lining up to that guard. That's what I'm talking about in terms of the chemistry and the
continuity. I think they'll get enough reps, though, that I don't know that they have to name that until opening day, to be honest with you. I really don't.
Well, I guess what I'm saying is you want there to be enough reps over the
I think they'll get them.
With that alignment.
Well, you know why?
Without maybe naming it officially.
Because what you do, you'll tell John Jerry. You'll tell Bobby Hart. You'll tell DJ Fluker. You know what? Under normal conditions, maybe you guys would only play 10 or 12 snaps apiece in the preseason games. But because we really need to get this thing ironed out, you're going to play 20 snaps apiece in all four preseason games. So that they do have the experience of playing with one another, so that if you don't name the starting five till right before the Dallas game, you can afford to do it. That I think what I'm saying is, unfortunately, the expense, well, the younger fellas, the Biznovatis, the Wheelers, those guys, they'll probably have to pay the price of giving up some snaps that they may have otherwise gotten during the preseason, because the Giants will want to make sure that each one of these other three get a significant enough bite of the hamburger.
And it's not so much the individual players, it's the combination.
Correct.
That's what
that's how I see it.
Sacrifice some time for the Wheelers and the Biznovatis.
Wheelers probably got the best case scenario, because he's going to be probably trying to be the backup left tackle.
So he'll be working on the complete opposite
side. I think so. I think
Biznovati's
going to get caught in the logjam.
I
think Wheeler's going to get the extra reps.
I think that's fair. Let's head back to the phone lines, 201-939-4513. He's Paul Dottino. I'm Lance Meadow. Thanks so much for tuning into Monday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live. Jamie's in Patterson. Jamie, what's happening?
Hey, how's it going, guys? Thanks for taking my call. I just I had a question on offense and one on defense. You know, you guys were just talking about the offensive line. But in general, you know, we've been talking about it for weeks. We know about the draft, and obviously the roster, and it's not finished. There's other people out there that might get cut and we might pick up. But what would you say what would be one piece on offense that we're still missing? You know, I know Paul talks about the thumper, you know, some of the callers and most of the fans are talking about the O-line. I think that we're definitely going to be better in that perspective. But if there is one thing that you know, could definitely be improved and make a big difference, and, you know, even if you have an example out there, what would that be?
Well, I mean, I'm at the point where I look at this roster. I don't know necessarily, you know, with the exception of the thumper, and we've had plenty of conversations. I still stand by. I think there's enough running backs on the team right now that they can identify roles and they'll be okay. So what my answer to you would be, Jamie, is that I don't think they're at the point where they need to worry about bringing in new personnel. They're at the point where guys need to be identified for what roles they're going to have for the upcoming season. For example, the tight end depth chart, that has to be worked out. Who's going to be doing what? Who's going to be the go-to guy? Who's going to be the main blocker? The running back depth chart, I think there's a lot of question marks about roles there. A wide receiver, it's more of the back end. So tight end and running back, there's a lot of different weapons. Some of these guys we haven't seen on the field yet. So to me, it's about identifying roles as opposed to bringing in new personnel.
I would add, and you're right about me with the thumper, it's still a concern for me. I would like to see one here. On the defensive side of the ball, I just don't know who the fourth cornerback is going to be right now. Again, you guys know I'm a big Dante Dion guy, but he's a slot corner. He's not going to be effective on the outside. People are too big in this league for him. And so who is that other guy? Who is that? If you want to say Dion's the fourth corner, and I don't say that because, again, he's only a slot guy. Who is that other corner going to be? And I don't know that they have him yet.
Well, I think Valentino Blake is in the driver's seat. See, I think he's more in the driver's seat than Dante Dion. Well, for that,
he's got experience. That doesn't mean he's the answer.
No. I'm not saying that he's definitely solidified that. But I think if you wanted to know going into training camp, who do you think perhaps has a step on the rest of the competition? I think by default, and also based on when they brought him in, you know, he wasn't just this last second addition. Blake came in during the course of free agency, right around when they brought Geno Smith in. I think he has a leg up for that fourth spot. Doesn't mean he's going to get it ultimately, but if you were to ask me who I think is in the driver's seat, I would go with Valentino Blake. And he also contributes on special teams, so I think that's going to help his case, maybe much more so than some of these other back-end corners.
Yeah. That's really what I just want to know about, you know, the team in general. And I guess I'll take the other question off the air. I just want to know the players that we had on defense last year, like, who do you think will make a big improvement? You know, I love our defense. I think some of the things you guys have said is that, you know, it was the key to our season last year. But, you know, there's a lot of young players there. Who do you think will you know, make a big leap this upcoming season? Like I said, I'll take it off the air, and thanks for taking my call. You know, I really appreciate your time, and, you know, love watching you guys. All right, take care.
Thanks for making the call, Jamie. Appreciate it. In terms of players who we think are going to make a jump,
Eli Apple.
I think
he was a rookie last year.
Correct.
And he played well. And this is year two. He's only going to get better. You know, Landon Collins already jumped it to the Pro Bowl.
Yeah, he made huge strides. I mean, where else do you expect him to go?
Was a finalist for Defensive Player of the Year. What else do you want from him?
And Janoris Jenkins also made huge strides. So, I mean, the goal is to keep him where he's at. I don't know if you're going to get necessarily much more out of that. I would go with, I think, Romeo Okwara. If he can hammer out more of a rotational, consistent type of role, I think he has an opportunity to perhaps show some continued improvement. In terms of the rest of the defense, I would throw out B.J. Goodson. I think he's another guy that can make
a
jump.
He's a total unknown right now.
Well, but I'm just saying, listen, an unknown can certainly make enough of a jump to become part of the rotation. That doesn't mean – I'm not saying he's going to the Pro Bowl. But I think that there's enough to say he gets more playing time.
He's supposed to. That's the hope.
Well, he's certainly in the mix of the middle linebacker position. But remember, Goodson was mainly a special teams player last season.
Correct.
Towards the latter part of the season, he got an opportunity to get on the
field. A little bit.
But now that Kelvin Shepard is not on the roster, he now enters training camp probably getting many more reps at that middle linebacker spot. So if you get more reps – you certainly have an opportunity to make a leap. So I think Goodson and Okwara right behind Eli Apple in terms of players that have the potential to move up the ladder. You know, I'd like to throw out a guy like, you know, Double O, I think has the potential, but let's see what happens on the field. I mean, you know,
again,
that's obviously
not
an
much
unknown.
Evidence.
Correct. So that's why, to me, I'd put Okwara ahead of Double O, because Okwara, we've seen some more flashes on the football field. Remember, Okwara had a great performance against the Cowboys when JPP missed that game.
I'm going to give you one that's a little unorthodox. Olivier Vernon. He played probably almost two-thirds of this season with a nasty hand injury.
Played a lot of snaps, though, regardless.
Played a ton of snaps. Only over 95%, I think, of the Giants' snaps on defense. And he was not right for a lot of the season because of that hand injury. I tell you what, he had a heck of a season. Now, if he's fully healthy from week 1 to week 16, Lance, I got to tell you, you know, I thought that this guy had a tremendous impact on this defense last year. And I think if he had been even healthier, it could have been scary. I think he would have been a Pro Bowl player. You know, I know he didn't make it. I think he would have been a Pro Bowl player, maybe even an All-Pro player, which, as you know, is another level higher. Might have even gone that high had he not banged up his hand in week 1 against Dallas last year, because that affected him.
Well, it lingered.
As much as he didn't want to talk about it,
we
know, because eventually Coach McAdoo said he's been fighting a hand issue. He didn't really, really start, you know, getting over that thing until week 10, 11. So I just kind of throw him in there.
Well, I mean, I would relate that to Weston Richburg. I mean, Richburg's another guy
Absolutely.
Who publicly makes it known at the end of the season
Absolutely.
That he was playing the entire year with a finger injury. So, you know, that's another player that let's see if he doesn't have to go through the lingering issues. I'm going to throw one other guy out on defense who I think is intriguing entering this season. I think Devon Kennard is a player to watch. Based on how they utilized him towards the tail end of the season, they started to move him down to the line of scrimmage. I'd be very interested to see what Spags can get out of Kennard in terms of maybe him taking a step up. Because what was the MO, Paul, for Kennard early in his career? Could not stay on the field. Last year, stayed on the field.
Yes.
They moved him around. They experimented. They said, okay, let's try to make you more of this jack of all trades. So this is year two of perhaps seeing him fully healthy and versatile. I would keep close tabs on him as a player that I think could perhaps take another jump.
Yeah, I think that's very fair. Sure.
Let's head back to the phone lines as we move forward here on Big Blue Kickoff Live. We got Mike in Jersey. Mike, what's happening?
Hey, guys. Thank you so much for having me, man. Awesome.
Thanks for making the call.
I'm having a big problem with the national media, really. I mean, they're just and I don't know if you feel the same way with I feel like we're kind of getting disrespected. The Cowboys are better than the Giants. I don't feel that way.
Well, they're not. They're not. The Giants are the most talented team in the division, and that's not even in doubt.
Right. Right. And then they say, well, they got the line, and they got that, and they got a running back, but the Giants don't. No. That's not correct. Okay. We're not getting the respect again this year again. I don't understand it. And it's just, you know, it seems to be the Giants, how the Giants win. You know, I think it's one of them years I see a solid team, a very solid team, especially after the draft. I am shocked that we're, like you said, getting disrespected a little bit, and they just kind of wear it on their sleeve, you know, and play with an extra chip, if you ask me, with Eli. And I'm very happy with the team. The O-line, I think, will be okay. I think we should be okay with the O-line, and he has extra weapons in the draft. I really like how we drafted. And the free agent draft guys that we signed, I think they really did well. I really like this team. And the only place I pretty much don't know is who's going to be our kicker. That's about it. I don't know about that. If you guys could know about that, who we're trying out there in that department. But we look very good everywhere else, in my opinion.
Well, you have depth. You have options. I don't know how long you have been listening for, Mike, but we actually did talk about the kicker earlier in the program, how Aldrick Rosas, who was with the Tennessee Titans practice squad last season, he's pretty much the guy that they've been working out, and we'll see whether or not they bring in a veteran kicker. But Rosas, he's going to get his first opportunity once you assume that the preseason comes and he actually gets his feet wet in a game situation.
I was wondering about that. He's Tennessee Titans. That's pretty good. It's a shame. I like Robbie Gold. He was a pretty good veteran kicker, come in, did very well. It's a shame we lost Brown. I think he was a really good kicker. But we always kind of had guys come in, you know, do very well. So, like you said, Tennessee Titans, kind of on the practice squad, veteran. I was wondering about that. I just got through to the program, so thank you.
Yeah,
so
no
much.
Worries.
But we look great across the board. I think that line, I think Justin Pugh, they all talk, nobody, he does so well. Ever since I've seen him come in his rookie year, he's like a quiet guy on that line. You know, they put him wherever. I think he even changed his number. I mean, he just always does his job. Is he going to be healthy going into this season so far? Is he healthy?
As far as we know.
Yeah.
As far as we know.
I mean, Pugh returned from that knee injury last season. And he reclaimed
his seem
job.
To be able to put him. He's one of the – he gets – nobody really talk. I mean, you guys do, of course. But, I mean, you know, he's a great lineman, and I think he's one of the best, really, the way he's played. He plays – if he ain't injured or slightly injured, he's out there, and he's always somewhere. So that's all I have to say. I think that – thank you guys so much for having me. Big Giants fan, and we're going for that fifth.
All right, Mike. Thanks for the phone call. Appreciate it.
All right, thanks, guys.
You got it. You know, are you somebody – I know we've had some conversations about this.
Yeah.
Do you look at the rankings at this time of the year? Do you actually care about that stuff?
Don't care.
Because I never care about them, even during the heart of the
Don't
regular
care.
Season. The only thing that matters to me is the standings. The narrative.
And they say 0-0 right now.
Yeah.
You know, I do think what you want to do is you look at the roster of all the teams in your division, because let's face it, the easiest way to get to the playoffs is to win your division. So I do think at this point in time, you do start looking at the other teams' rosters and you say to yourself, okay, what is the generic talent grade of that roster? Is that a very good roster? Is it a good roster? Is it an okay roster? Does it have a lot of holes in it? You know, how few holes does the roster have on it, especially in the starting lineup? And that'll give you a feel for, okay, this is the most talented team up and down the roster in the division, of which I have done, and the Giants are that team. However, that is not in stone. That is not in concrete, you know, outside your front sidewalk. That's not the way it works in this business. Too many things can happen between now and the time they finalize their 53 before week one, okay? But right now, you know, you want to look at the 90s, the 90-man that's out there for each of these teams. Yeah, the Giants have the most of any team in the East, but that doesn't mean a whole lot right now.
Well, and the best roster on paper, we were talking about this earlier, doesn't always translate to the football field. That's more of a reason why the rankings are meaningless, because they're strictly going on paper since we haven't seen any of these football teams on the field. Now, with that being said, I think that the NFC East overall is a division, Paul. I thought they all had really nice drafts in terms of addressing issues and getting some good value where they selected. When you look at what the Eagles did in terms of bringing in some defensive weapons, You look at Dallas has really completely revamped its secondary. They've added depth in terms of their young guys. They still have a few veterans that were left behind from some of the free agency players that they lost. And then you look at the Washington Redskins, who I think addressed, you know, some defensive line issues and made sure that they kept the continuity of their offensive weapons around Kirk Cousins together. So, I mean, I see a strong division. And it's essentially like that every single year. There are so many examples of how you think maybe one team's going to run away with things, and then all of a sudden, you know, you have it neck and neck. I mean, last year was even unique where the Cowboys went on that massive winning streak with a rookie running back and a rookie quarterback. But in years prior, you know, you usually have two or three teams near the end of the line towards the end of the season. And I don't see why this season is going to be any different. I always go back to the fact, Paul, the NFC East has been the poster child of parity in the NFL. We have not had consecutive division champs since you go back to the early 2000s when the Eagles won four in a row. I mean, it's essentially been flip a coin, choose who you want to win the division. It's very difficult to duplicate success from the previous year.
It's interesting that we've had a couple of calls about Aldrick Rosas today, the Giants kicker, because, quite frankly, that is always the one nasty Achilles heel that can ruin a very, very good roster.
Absolutely. You could lose a lot of close games.
The kicker has a lot of pressure, and he's got a lot of weight on his shoulders. And the Giants have not had place-kicking problems for years. They have been so fortunate to have so many good kickers year after year after year. And we've already mentioned the guys who they've discarded and gone on and had terrific records with other teams. Nothing would be more painful for this team, and I don't want to put pressure on Rosas. I really don't. But nothing would be more painful for this team than if they did put together a terrific 53 that, you know, absolutely deserved to win the division, and then because of X number of missed kicks, they lose X number of games and cost themselves a playoff spot. That's probably about the most painful thing I think that could happen to a club and an organization is when a kicker costs you a playoff spot. And the Giants haven't been in that position forever.
Plus, remember, the extra point is no chip shot anymore. So
no.
It's not just field goals, it's the extra points as well. Let's head back to the phone lines. We got Joe in Pennsylvania on the line. Joe, what's happening?
Hey, hello. How are you guys doing today?
Doing well, Joe. How's things with you?
I'm like you guys. It doesn't matter if they rank us, you know what I mean, first or last. It's a long way to go, and you got to look at injuries and all that stuff that can happen, you know, when you really get down to it. So, I mean, we got to play the games first. So, what I want to get was what you were talking about, that athlete. What did you say his name was? Sneed, Paul?
Kevin Sneed from Carson Newman, Division II.
I'm just saying, I was just thinking, definitely you said it'd be very hard to crack the lineup as a receiver. But I'm just wondering, is it harder to crack the lineup, you think? I'm just saying, not our lineup, but just the play, the position as a defensive back or a receiver.
DB.
You know what I'm getting at there. Do you have an opinion on that or no?
I think DB is a lot harder because you have to deal with man, zone coverage, what's going on with the other defensive backs on the field. With a receiver, you could give him a very limited portion of the playbook and say, listen, you're just going to run go routes. Well, you're just going to run, you know, little hooks and squares. And you can get away with giving a receiver a much more limited portion of the playbook, and he could still give you something. With a defensive back, If he doesn't know what's going on with that entire defense, although they'll say, well, we'll just give him the sub package. Well, the sub package has become so big now. It is such a prominent part of your defense. You can't do that anymore and say, oh, we'll just give him the sub package. You'll be all right. We'll work him in slowly. You put him in the sub package, he's playing more snaps than the starters are in some cases.
Of course, because if it's a pass-happy team you're playing, you're not going to have that extra linebacker on the field.
Yeah, well, I guess then that shoots down my idea of, if he could just get on somebody man-on-man and, especially a rookie with speed coming in, you know, I was just thinking of that, you know, with his great ability, you said, of jumping and his speed, you know, it'd be catch-up speed. So I guess
remember,
I got down on.
He's very, very raw. He is a sprinter by trade who has played some college football, and I think the number I saw was he only had five catches, you know, at Carson Newman. So, and that's Division II. So to even say, just use your speed and cover somebody man-to-man, I understand he has done some defensive back stuff as well. But that, you know, that's asking an awful lot of a guy
maybe,
who has virtually no experience.
Well, yeah, he does have return experience as well. And, Joe, I think what you're hitting on actually goes back to the point that Paul brought up early in the show. Somebody like that, they can experiment if he has the ability to be placed on the practice squad because he's going to have to take on multiple roles as part of the scout team. So they can maybe line him up as a defensive back. They can line him up as a wide receiver. But to ask him to do that in a regular season game in year one, that I think may be throwing a little bit too much on his plate.
Yeah, well, whatever. Who knows? You know, you just never know. Like you said, you can't teach the speed and the jumping ability, the, you know, that there, you know. So I also heard some, well, as much as you can see, I, you know what I mean, that they like that tackle out of Pittsburgh, you know. I heard David Deal commenting on him. I read on him that, you know, that he had some injuries and maybe that's what kept him away from being drafted, you know. And so far, what they can see of them, they like. So that's all I have to say. So thank you very much for taking my call.
You got it, Joe. Thanks for the call. Appreciate it. Thanks so much.
Talking about Biz Novotny.
Yeah,
yeah. Who's a real pit bull and a scrapper kind of lineman. And you know, he has more of a body type of a guard. And a lot of people, because he's not overly athletic, think that's better for him to project inside where he can get help on both sides of the ball instead of being on the edge. But I see no reason why he can't make the 53.
I just want to get to one tweet real quickly, and then we'll wrap up the program. At Gruen Ben, he says, did you touch on the Herzlick move to tight end? And Ben McAdoo actually just said that don't read too much into the number change because he has played tight end as a scout player on that team. So once again, I don't know if there's so much to read into that that's necessarily going to solidify a roster spot, but we'll definitely try to answer some more of those Twitter questions on the Twitter hashtag Giants chat after the program ends, and we'll try to get back to you with respect to tomorrow's program too. But that's going to wrap up things for us here on Big Blue Kickoff Live. For Paul Dottino, I'm Lance Meadow. We'll speak to you tomorrow right here on Giants.com. Have a good one.